Heyo, and here we go. It is episode 116. All different. We talk comics now. This is, let's just call it episode 116, Out of the Iron Closet. I am your host, Keith. Chris is off this week, traveling somewhere in the wilds of the United States. Mo and Brett, as usual, are on assignment. I am joined by two special guests. This is a Comicosity All-Star episode.
All-Star.
We're joined by... joining us again is Michael Hale, the who writes the Comics Classroom column on Comicosity.
Nice to be welcomed back.
But Michael's tentative tonight. He's had the We Talk Comics experience once. He has braved a return. And he's also under the watchful eye of his boss.
Is that what I want?
Comicosity's senior editor, Matthew Santori Griffith. Matt, welcome back.
Thank you. Always a huge, huge pleasure.
Well, this is going to be an interesting episode this week. It is, as we record this, San Diego Comic-Con is just kicking off. The amount of crazy comic stuff you are going to hear by the time this episode goes live is unbelievable. We're going to do the news a little differently just because there's so much happening every minute as San Diego goes on. The hilariousness of, you know, the week before when there have been all the Marvel and DC announcements last week, and everyone's like, oh, you remember when they used to announce things at San Diego Comic Con? And then, of course, there's like 30 books have been announced before the end of the first night, before the preview night is over. There's been about 30 titles announced between Image Expo and Dark Horse. It'll be a busy San Diego, and certainly I expect next week we'll be back with a lot of movie stuff. The movie stuff is what they do definitely wait for the con for. Saturday is DC's big movie day, where they have Hall H for a goodly chunk of the day. Rumor that there's going to be another DC movie announced in the next couple of days here. So we'll be here with we'll have a San Diego post game on episode 117. But right now, let's get into some news. And who sponsors the news, Matt?
I believe that the news is sponsored by Comicosity, your best source for news, reviews, interviews, features, columns by people like Michael here and myself. And it's all comics all the time. Also, your great source for San Diego Comic-Con wrap-up.
Absolutely. And if you're hearing this while San Diego's still going on, there is a page on Comicosity that is summarizing and giving you good links for everything that gets announced in San Diego. So one-stop shopping. You can catch up on all the crazy announcements as they come along. And speaking of crazy announcements, we have 24 books announced on the first day of San Diego Comic-Con. 12 titles from Dark Horse, all creator-owned. 12 titles from Image, all creator-owned. Now, I can't even begin to go through the list. But Michael, I don't know if you've had a chance to look at everything that's been announced.
I scanned through the page recently, and I usually wind up liking to catch up with everything when it's over, because usually I get so like, oh, I wonder what's coming out. Ooh, I wonder what's coming out. Ooh, ooh, ooh. And so I just decided, unless it's something that I can't possibly not hear about, like if it's going to be like, oh, the entire cast of Avengers 2 will be there and they're on stage. Generally, I try to catch up with everything as it's over instead of being glued to my screen thinking, ooh, 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 because then I get nothing done.
You've overestimated the amount I get done otherwise, Michael. Well, we've actually got a Jeff Lemire book at Dark Horse and a Jeff Lemire book at Image, which is quite cool. We've got a Tyler Jenkins book at Dark Horse. We've got a Matt Kent book, Brian Wood. There's some really amazing creators Certainly one of the more interesting things that got announced, it's got announced just a few days before San Diego, is Fight Club 2.
Yes, I'm very excited about this, as Fight Club is one of my favorite books and my favorite film.
Ooh. So you're excited to know that the author's involved, and it's not just a, hey, wouldn't it be cool if we could make Fight Club the comic? It's actually sanctioned. Well, then again, that may have been what his intent
was. That's what the editor
was,
I imagine that's what the editor sounds like exactly, too. That's a, right. That sounds like Michael Richardson right there.
We got some books. We can, what do we got? What's on my CD rack? Fight Club. We'll make Fight Club. It'll be great. Kids will love it.
Kids will love it.
If that goes, we'll make Survivor 2. We'll make Choke 2.
I would totally go for Invisible Monsters 2.
I want the Survivor prequel. That's what I want. It's just the people on an airplane.
People on an airplane.
People on a plane. No stakes.
I think the one that's really leaped out at me out of the books announced here is Ray Fox Intersect, which is an all painted book. It's actually when I spoke to Ray at the Calgary Comic Con in April, he had hinted to me that something like this was coming. That because we talked about his artwork and that he's really only been working on graphic novels. And he had hinted at that time that he was looking at something monthly that he would draw. So I don't even care what this thing's about, to be honest. It's Ray Fox writing and painting a book. It's going to be unbelievable. He's such a great storyteller when he's in control of both of those things.
Yeah, for sure.
I'm actually going to – I'm trying to look up – is this Ray Fox? Is that who you said his name was?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Fawkes.
Ah, that would explain my.
as in Guy Fawkes, but don't look up Guy Fawkes. It gets you something totally
different. Right.
Boo Protestants. Just go to a Catholic. I Love Catholics fan site. It's like
Oh, now we're
Parliament. Boo.
Now we're gonna get letters. And the two least surprising names in the creator own list, Cullen Bunn and Rick Remender. I mean, you pretty much could have just started writing around. So Cullen Bunn and Rick Remender had titles announced. Though I don't think you can make it through a list of five, let alone 24 books, without having both of those names turn up.
Yeah, no, they're pretty prolific.
So some fantastic stuff are coming up here. We'll start seeing these kind of the end of the year. Hopefully we see them all. Sometimes you get these giant announcements and they don't all actually make it to the shelf.
Yeah, or at least aren't out by the following year, which is always a little embarrassing.
That'd be a good, we should have done some wrap up on San Diego 2013 to see how many of those books have hit the shelves. Right. I did notice that I don't know if he's doing anything else in San Diego, but I did notice Grant Morrison's name on the DC Comics booth signing.
For Multiversity, I would imagine.
It's kind of neat.
I'd hope so. It's like my eyes get all big. It's like, ooh, he keeps saying, oh, eventually I'm going to get out of comics. I'm not going to do much more. It's like Wonder Woman, I think, is one of the only things left on his list. But then there's this big, big project. And it's like, please just hurry up. Just finish it. Just do it. I've been working on it for 5 years.
Here's the problem is Grant Morrison has more announced but undone books than anyone. He's got this book called Nameless. Okay, Annihilator is actually finally coming out in October. He's got the Wonder Woman project. He's got whatever he's going to be doing for Boom now. There was a couple. Oh, Sea Guy 3. Yeah, he's mentioned a few other things. He's kind of the boy that cried wolf now.
I just want him to give me the 18 days animated series that he promised and showed clips for and made an art book of. I just saw that and was like, whoa. Then there's the art for the Wonder Woman project, which looked really, really amazing. And he just was...
30 years from now, we're going to get a documentary like Yadorowski's Dune. But it'll be Grant Morrison's Multiversity, and it'll just be this whole documentary about how they never actually got the book released. But man, would it have been great!
Don't say things like that. No,
that's coming out.
I'll believe it when I see the final issue.
No, all of them will be out before whatever the crazy August or April thing is.
I'm like that with anything that Guillermo del Toro talks about, because he talks about so many things. And I'm like, okay, Pacific Rim 2, okay, animated series, all right, comic book. And then eventually he just gets involved in all these projects. So whenever anything comes out, I'm like, oh, good, he made it. Right.
Yeah, that's the thing you don't want to bring up when people are like, well, where's Justice League Dark in the list of DC projects coming up? Because Del Toro said he was working on it next. Like, well, yeah, he said he was working on like 18 things next. I mean, dude worked on The Hobbit for like 7 years and never did it. Just because he says it's the next thing. So I'm gonna give Matt a little hassle, because I have hassled Matt before for not buying the Comixology Submit bundle. That came out in the spring. So many great books in it. I know Matt is so far behind in his reading, and yet, at a dime a piece, he still said no to the Comixology bundle.
The first time.
Now we have a second Comixology bundle. A very little duplication, because I noticed when I hit buy on it, it said 94 books out of 100. So I owned almost nothing that was in this bundle, which is really cool, because I think my number was closer to like 85 out of 100 on the first one.
Oh, okay.
They've announced this will be up for the next few days. It is the 5th anniversary of Comixology. I'm looking at the note here on Comic Custody that says Comixology now has 50,000 comics from 75 publishers.
Wow.
Which is just an amazing number, unbelievable the amount of content available. We've got another 100 books for $10. This is on, it may be over by the time you hear this episode, depending on how our editors do on getting this episode out. Are you hitting buy this time, Matt?
I am actually literally hitting buy right this second. Mostly to shut you up, but I do believe that I missed out on the first one, so I'm going to give it a whirl, and hopefully I'll get to read them someday soon.
I also hope that about the first bundle. I have a lot of those issues still sitting there, but they are mine and waiting. I'll tease something for the next episode as well, that one of the books that was in the first bundle, The Chair's Hiatus by Matthew Bogart. Matthew's Kickstarter has kicked off, which is a graphic novel hardcover of The Chair's Hiatus. Really amazing. It was actually a web series that has become, that he put through a submit. Now is going to Kickstarter to get a print copy of this thing done. Some really cool additions that you can get, some added on things. He's got a fairly low goal, 4,600, I think, and he's, the first few days have been really successful. If you're a fan of Strangers in Paradise, I think you'd really dig this book. Quite like it. I believe it's $2.99 on Comixology. The packages for the print copy start at $20 on his Kickstarter, and we'll have Matthew on the next episode to talk about that.
Awesome.
And I figured I would buy the hardcover because I bought his comic for a dime. So I thought, what the heck? Okay, I'll kick him a few dollars, because it was so far my favorite book that I've read out of the first submit bundle. All right, well, I think that's all I was going to cover in the news. Was there anything else that you thought was worth hitting?
I think anything else will be covered by the larger topic we'll be talking about.
Oh, that's true, too. Yeah. Yeah, there weren't really, to be honest, there really hasn't been any DC news yet, because all the news that came out 2 weeks ago is essentially just their October solicits. So maybe there'll be a little something over this weekend, but I kind of doubt it. San Diego just, you know, it, once you're in it, it's really dominated by the movie news, like you were saying. So I suspect that the publishers have pretty much gotten out of the way at this point.
I think particularly for Marvel and DC, they know what's going to happen with the movie news. I mean, certainly DC got out of the way last year because Superman, they knew Superman Batman was going to be announced last year. Maybe that's a great question then, is last year was the Superman Batman announcement that took 10 months to actually get a title for the movie. about 9 months to actually see an image from it. Are we going to get anything at San Diego this year that's as earth-shattering as that?
Yes. I do believe so.
I think because it's supposed to come out, what?
It's still 2 years away.
2 years?
2 years away, yeah. It's a long piece, yeah.
I figure they'll probably do something.
I mean, a formal announcement of Justice League may be the next thing. I don't know if they're ready for that.
I'm guessing Shazam, actually.
Yeah, we've been hearing rumor for a little bit that that whether it's Shazam or not, The Rock is announcing that whatever movie The Rock is going to star in is going to be announced.
Yeah.
He's been teasing stuff on his Twitter. It really sounds like Shazam to those on the inside. He's not very aware and it means nothing. He included a phrase, something like, say the name.
Or just say the word.
Say the word, just something like that. Yeah, so it sounds a whole lot like Shazam. Some people think he can't play Shazam.
Yes, and that claim actually made me leave a Facebook group this week for good, because I just can't deal with it anymore. There's certain arguments that I'm okay with. Somebody argued that he was too old. Okay, I could give you that. He's 42, playing, you know, a hero who generally in the comics is in his 20s. But I don't have that problem. But everything else seems to be really this, like I've been getting from fans, this coded way of saying, well, he could play Black Adam, but he couldn't play Shazam. And it's essentially, it just sort of bears down to, yeah, he's not white enough. Which does sort of lead into our main discussion, but...
I'm not racist, but he can't play Shazam.
Right.
That's right.
Because, not my Shazam.
Because why would a magically powered person who gets their power from an Egyptian wizard have olive skin? That's just,
you know, ridiculous. With his Greek named heroes. Happens to be playing Hercules. We're okay with that. Oh, but he can't be a Greek inspired magical superhero. Ooh, that's crazy talk.
Again, he doesn't look Greek enough to be Shazam. Oh, I don't know. I think there is a cardinal rule that if you start the phrase, I'm not racist, but you are totally racist.
Well, yeah, nobody's saying that.
No, they'll be much more coded than that, you're right.
Yeah.
He's more suitable to Black Adam.
Look, I just like the idea that I could finally have the fan fiction tie-in of the Mummy, Scorpion King, and Marvel Comics I've always wanted. I mean, don't take that away from me. Let him be Black Adam, and it turns out, once upon a time, he made a pact with Anubis as a wizard.
That'll be the greatest fan edit ever. Recutting Shazam with Scorpion King. Just the absolute best. You could almost make the movie now just out of well edited scenes. Yeah.
I think maybe Dwayne Johnson would be happy because he'd be, what, 15 years younger?
Well, that's,
maybe not 15. That's a little.
That's the thing, though, is that you have Dwayne Johnson from like 12 years ago playing Billy Batson, the young boy, young Egyptian boy, who who, when he says the word, turns into, you know, Dwayne the Rock Johnson of 2014.
Who happens to look exactly the same.
Looks, you know, just, well, I mean, Billy Batson just looks about 15 years older than he really is. Like, the math still works. I'm really now imagining that this, like, alternate world version of Billy Batson where he's, like, in his early 40s and he turns into, like, a 55-year-old guy when he says it just that it keeps rolling forward.
I don't think that's how it works.
I don't believe that's how it works either.
That's not the science
in that he's made up. You're probably right.
that's been a really interesting argument online that I just can't quite fathom. So Batgirl is getting a new creative team and a new costume and a new artist and all that. But the most interesting arguments about, and I haven't seen very many, to be honest, this is a move by DC that's been so overwhelmingly accepted that it almost frightens me to some degree. because I feel like, you know, is the wall going to start bleeding and, you know, cats are going to start walking on the ceiling.
And then Matt wakes up to find out he's been in a coma for 3 months, and he'll never get that time back.
Exactly. But the one really persistent criticism is that her Batgirl's new costume, which is made of like a leather jacket and, you know, whatever, a cowl that doesn't wrap around her chin, that it's not bulletproof and that someone's going to rip the mask off her head too easily.
Oh boo hoo. Oh no. But of all the things you can gripe about.
The writer's response is, well, no they won't, because we won't write that.
Which I actually is a bit cheap to me, I'll be honest. When I was a kid, I would watch Dukes of Hazzard with my family, and we'd get to the commercial break where everything was terrible for the Duke boys, and I would say, how are they going to get out of this one? Like, you know, I was really concerned for the Duke boys. And my dad would say, well, they'll get out of it no problem. It's in the script. Which is like the most annoying thing. Because
okay, but that's,
you just
a little
wrecked
different.
My suspension of disbelief. Like, but that's really what he's saying is, well, that wouldn't happen. That's work.
Right. He's not going to write that. It's not like he wrote, he's going to write Batgirl getting shot. And then you're going to turn the page and she's going to be like, I'm invulnerable. Or this other is bulletproof. That would be what you're describing.
Well, actually, you need when you turn the page for my dad to ruin it for me. That's,
well,
you need my dad to go,
well,
it's just a comic book. They're just drawings. Nothing's really happening.
Were those the same people that were like, oh, how could you not tell he's Clark Kent? Look, I'm just going to draw some glasses on this newspaper of Superman. Look, it's him. I mean,
that's a good comparison, actually.
Clayton Moore is my argument in favor of the glasses working. Clayton Moore played the Lone Ranger, which was one of the most successful TV shows on television. And Clayton Moore was never recognized in public because when he was on the Lone Ranger, he wore a domino mask. And people who watched the show every day, every week, would not recognize him on the street. That domino mask totally worked.
Yeah. Now, I believe that. I really feel like J.J. Abrams has the same advantage. Like, once he takes those chunky glasses off, I mean, they're a miracle. Do you know, for years, I thought he was like 30 years old. He is like 50.
And then Rick Perry's in Texas is doing the same thing. He's our state governor, and he's kind of not particularly well thought of. And in all his polls, people think you're smarter if you wear glasses. So he's all of a sudden started wearing glasses in all his interviews. And it's just been the funniest thing. It's the reverse Superman complex. He's like, they'll never know it was me now.
Reverse Superman. that's my favorite 70s villain right there, Reverse Superman. That's I love him. All right, let's talk about our topic here. So Matthew wrote a column for Comicosity under his regular column Crisis of Epic Proportions. And now Matt, I want you to talk about what your column was about. And then we got about 15 different pieces I want to get into. So,
So you're more prepared than I am. Okay.
So this is coming out of, have they changed the name? Like I've been jokingly calling it all different Marvel now.
No, the name of the initiative is actually Avengers Now.
Okay.
That is the official name of the next of the third wave of Marvel relaunches. That we had Marvel Now, we had all new Marvel Now, and now we have Avengers Now. And they all have exclamation points, by the way, which really screws up my word when I try to type things. So what Marvel announced last week in advance of San Diego Comic-Con was this Avengers Now initiative. And it's three parts that have been revealed so far. The first was that the current Thor is going to be deemed unworthy by some means in the story coming up. And he will be replaced by a female Thor, who is actually going to be Thor. They have not revealed who that woman is. I'm not sure how the mechanics of that work, because I tried asking people online, like, is Donald Blake Thor? Is Thor human as an avatar? And everyone was like, no, you don't understand it. And then they explained it. I was like, no, I don't get it. But that's fine.
It depends on the writing staff.
Yeah, I was really asking, like, right this minute, like, how is Thor made or whatever? And nobody could really answer that. So
he's just Thor.
Somehow, like, Thor, or Odin's son, will still be around. He's going to have an axe instead of a hammer. He'll be the unworthy or whatever he is. But there's going to be a new female Thor helming the title. At the 2 days later, Marvel announced that, because those who've been reading Captain America should know, Steve Rogers has lost his super soldier serum. Say that five times fast. And he is now, like, 90 years old. As he should be. and so the mantle of Captain America has passed on to Sam Wilson, who was formerly the Falcon. So now we have a black Captain America, which is great. So we have a female Thor and a black Captain America. And so the natural question I, of course, have is, well, will we have a gay Iron Man? And so I wrote a column for Comicosity called I Want a Gay Iron Man. And Superior Iron Man is the new title that has been announced. Iron Man is moving to San Francisco, mind you. No, they have not announced that he is gay. What they have announced is that he's going to be kind of an asshole, or more of an asshole than he normally is. And he'll be interacting with Daredevil and whatever. There'll be other changes. And his armor's new, of course. But at any rate, you know, I took the opportunity to look at Marvel's stable and really take a real tight look on what I would consider their big guns, or their A-list now, but maybe a little more than their A-list. And I have to say, I'm you know, it struck me that I was pretty impressed. You know, I do believe that putting forth a major story like this with a female Thor and a black Captain America, and if they were to do a gay Iron Man, this of course would apply as well. It's a major commitment, at least today, to showing a more diverse Marvel universe. And they also, Marvel of course also released a little image for their Avengers Now initiative, which I do not believe is the roster of the Avengers, but just different characters who will probably be receiving books in this initiative. And it includes Deathlok, who's African-American, Angela, who's, I'm sure, getting her own book because we need that. Scarlet Witch, Doctor Strange, et cetera, et cetera. Medusa, Ant-Man, of course, because, you know, we need more Ant-Men.
Matt's resentment of Scott Lang
is huge. So huge, I even had to mention it in an article about Iron Man. I put it at the very end, though, so you can just ignore it. So for the article, I went through, you know, quite honestly, praise for Marvel. I think this is a big deal. And it's not the only thing that I think they should be doing, and they have been doing other things. They've introduced lots of new characters who are LGBT and who are persons of color, and they've tried to push forward a lot of new female characters. The Ms. Marvel book is actually pretty astounding in that it's one of the only all new Marvel Now books that stopped dropping in sales after issue 2.
Because it's wonderful.
It is wonderful, and it's going into the first issue is going into its sixth printing. But most Marvel Now books drop between 50% and 70% off their number one issue by issue 4, and Ms. Marvel did not do that. It's actually one of the highest selling solo books that Marvel is putting out right now, which is why I included her among the characters I consider in Marvel's A-list. But you know, of those characters, there are 6 women. I believe there are 6 persons of color. There's a raccoon, of course. and I'm not the only person, in fact, who sort of thought about this in the last week. There was a gentleman who wrote an article for the Daily Beast sort of wishing that the Hulk was Asian and his sort of rationale for that. Now, you know, in writing this article, of course, I truly don't expect Marvel to make Iron Man gay, although if I would fall over and be super pleased if they did. But I think what really bothered me is when I initially suggested it on Twitter, I had a number of people who acted as if it was a sheer impossibility. And I think that's where I took issue. Because I think the story would actually work. Would it be the best thing for Iron Man? I don't know. Would it be everyone's favorite? Probably not. And I absolutely told anyone who said to me that they didn't like that idea, that I was like, that's okay. I mean, you don't have to like it. I'm not trying to force anything down anyone's throat. But some of the assumptions that people had about sexuality and about coming out, especially coming out at a later age, I found a little bit disturbing. So that was really the impetus of the article. It got a lot of interest. I got a lot of positive response. I got a lot of negative response. I've made lots of new friends online. wonderful new Facebook friends who I will treasure forever. But not really friends. And you know, to Comicosity's credit, all the comments there were very, very kind and very reasoned for the most part. And I think that speaks a little to our community. But Facebook is not the same as that. But that's okay. It was really just my asking the question and provoking the conversation. So I think there's been a lot of discussion about how this is a terrible thing, and not a gay Iron Man necessarily, but, you know, a female Thor or a black Captain America, that these are for a variety of reasons. And some I think are legitimate arguments, even though I don't agree with them. Some I don't think are legitimate. But I think as long as we can sort of separate those two categories, I think it's a good conversation to have.
Mm-hmm. Well, and it's been interesting rattling this through my head the past few days. I mean, because I've certainly, I have the intellectual part of, you know, there's the business realities, there's that structural thing, I listened to a great podcast a couple of days ago, an interview with the director of Iron Man 3. And he was asked about the alcoholism story that was done many, many years ago in Iron Man, the early 80s, Demon in a Bottle. And he was asked, like, you know, they started kind of going down that road in Iron Man 2. They did a little bit more in Iron Man 3. They leaned toward that, hints that he was addicted to the armor, etc. But they, like, why didn't they go that extra step? And he said flat out, we can touch on some of it. We can touch on the behavior that's similar to addiction. But he said, ultimately, it's a Disney movie. We're not going to be able to make him an alcoholic. And I thought it was a really, it was an interesting reality check that when he talked about the character and the history, he talked about it being a Marvel movie, but when he talked about the business of it, it was a Disney movie. And he actually changed those words. So there's that part of it. And I've never had a moment, as I've gone back and forth with Matt about this, where I felt that Matt's going to be let down that they don't do the story. I think Matt's aware of some of the of those realities, but it has made me question what I like. I like it as a what if, and I like it as an Elseworlds, or like if it was an alternate reality. And I don't know what it is about it that doesn't work for me, that I don't like about the idea that they would do it. There is a part of me that is, because I feel it's going to be undone. And I know that, like, this is something that Matt has addressed really early on, is then don't undo it. And that's a whole other a whole other structure of reality. I don't like it for the same reason I didn't like them bringing Bucky back. There was a great story to tell in bringing Bucky back. What Brubaker did, an excellent story. But at the end of that, you're left with something you can't undo, which is Bucky's alive again. And they have struggled with that character now for 3 years. Because they don't really know what to do with this character that was gotten rid of for a reason. And I think Jason Todd has been the same thing. Red Hood was an entertaining story, and they've struggled for years because they killed that character because he was a crappy character. And now they've brought him back and they told a good story. And then what? And I think that's my feeling with to do Tony coming out of the closet, I think would be a fantastic story. I think it'd be a really powerful story. And I don't know where you go after that. I think there's some fundamentals of the character that I think the character would have to be so profoundly changed that at a certain point he stops being Tony Stark Iron Man.
So I have to ask, because I truly don't know the answer to this question, because I really don't read Iron Man. Which makes it a little hypocritical that he come out. And I recognize that. But how much of his romantic life is the central key point to his book? Because my impression is that what would happen after Tony Stark comes out, he would just have his next adventure. It would not, him being gay would not be the focus of the book. It just wouldn't. I mean, it would be part of his character, just like anything else. But it wouldn't, you know, it wouldn't suddenly turn into Tony Stark's Datarama just because that was one story.
But the other core parts of this character are ego, his certainty of himself and his rightness.
Sure. Oh, because I don't know any gay guys like that.
But this would be him accepting that he has been wrong about something core in his being for his entire life.
Yeah, I think that's powerful, to be honest.
And I think
I don't think it makes I don't think coming out makes anyone any different in that way. I don't think that it I think it profoundly changes a lot of the way you look at yourself, and it might profoundly change the sort of way you beat yourself up about a lot of things, which would be an interesting interplay with that alcoholism and the, you know, the addiction to the armor. And I mean, it's a lot of intertwining, really interesting stuff, maybe more theoretical than practical, but ultimately he's still an asshole. I mean, he's not going to not be an asshole. Like, it's, and it was so interesting to me that I never realized before I wrote this article that every character who is gay, lesbian, or bisexual, who has had their own title, their solo title, mind you, not like a character in Young Avengers or in the movement or whatever, but a solo title, except for Kevin Keller, because, you know, he's perfect and awesome and I love him. But every single gay, lesbian, or bisexual character who has his own book is a total asshole. I mean, every single one of them. I mean, you have Mystique, you have Midnighter, you have Voodoo, Constantine, even Batwoman. She's kind of an asshole. So, there's one more. Oh, yeah, Dark Wolverine, Dakin. You know, so what's one more asshole, I guess?
See, the way that I always thought would be entertaining to handle things like that, I think might be a way that might inadvertently make certain readers really angry, is there was an article I read way, way back, I think maybe last year, and it talked about, or maybe it wasn't a year, but the person who wrote it said that the main topic of the article was, oh, why don't we care about superheroes that die if they're just going to come back? And the writer said, well, I always viewed these characters as actors that are playing these parts. It's like, you know, when you see your favorite actor in Shakespeare or playing a Shakespearean role, let's say Kenneth Branagh in Hamlet, and then he dies, you don't think, oh no, they killed Kenneth Branagh, he should stay dead, he should never be in a movie again. You think, oh, I'm also going to watch Kenneth Branagh in this other movie tomorrow, and it's really good. So I always thought that depending on the writing team, if you want to have a gay, bisexual, straight Iron Man, go for it. If that fits the story you want to tell, I think you should remake any character within reason of what the story should be. I don't really think it should matter, but I think that leaves a lot of responsibility on the writer to do it for the right reasons. Like, if someone really thinks, hey, I've looked at all these things in Iron Man, I really think it would be really good to make a story where he comes out as being gay. I could see some other people doing it to unmake certain gay characters because it doesn't fit their image. Someone may want to say, oh, I don't think Batwoman should be gay at all. I actually think, and they may have the best reasons ever, but if it doesn't, and that's where you'll start noticing someone will go, oh, well, does that match the story? And someone will go, well, no, but I think this way is better. And that's where I just think you should have a lot of writer responsibility. And also, that's why I'm also never going to be in charge of comic books ever. Is I also think X-Men should be removed entirely from Marvel and be its own comic that should never mix with anything else. Ever, ever, ever. Let it be its own world that they can play in on its own.
Well, see, if you took all the core characters out, like if you took the Fantastic Four and Avengers out and started a new line where they were in all, they had their own world. Actually, you get Jim Lee and Rob Liefeld to work on it.
Yeah.
This is gold. I
think that's a great idea. Yeah.
But I just think that, just like with Shakespeare, I mean, many things that people, I know, I've been to many Shakespeare plays where the director's like, oh man, I really think it'll be great if we have this one play, but we set it in Iraq. Won't that be something? And some people are going to go, oh, I really think that brings out more of this story, and it's very relevant to today. And other people are going to go, ooh, ew, they're going to turn their nose up.
Well,
I mean,
I used to be on the board of a Shakespeare company, and I've seen a lot of theme. I call it theme Shakespeare. But this is tricky in a certain way because I saw an excellent version of Julius Caesar that used Nazi and Italian fascist uniforms to tell the struggle. And it would really inform the story. It worked with the struggles. That's not what's suggested here, because that's an interesting way to tell the story. What you do if you make Tony Stark gay is you tell everyone that's the only way you can do Julius Caesar from now on. Like that's the difference here. Yes, it will be interesting, but from now on, Julius Caesar always has to be done that way. You don't get to tell non-fascist Julius Caesar anymore, because we can't backtrack that once you make that kind of choice. You've changed this character. And I think what you're talking about there, Michael, is the what is to many readers a dirty word, and to many readers that think it's a dirty word, that what they will rattle their chains about the most, continuity.
It's a comic book. They'll find ways to change it. At one point, I'm sure they thought, man, this Jason Todd character is going to really stick around, and then he's going to be. And we'll have a call in to kill him. Okay, we'll bring him back. Well, no, we won't. I mean, it just depends on your writing team. And if it's a good idea, I'm sure at one point someone probably thought Batwoman, we'll never use Batwoman again. What a terrible character. And someone went, how about we use her? How about she be gay? Let's keep her around. Is it a good story? Will it stay as long? I think it's been pretty good. I think. Sometimes falling back on the continuity, there's plenty of things in continuity that we don't want to go back to and we'll never go back to. And some changes were absolutely for the better for some characters. I don't want Superman that juggles planets anymore. I read Golden Age Superman. It was pretty awful. I don't want us to go back to populist Superman who just beats up mobsters and says, this housing is... He has one story where like, oh, the housing that you're living in is terrible, and he blows it down so he can get this family a new home built. That's not what I want. And I'm very glad that they use continuity to fix that, because I think they made a more progressive kind of story. And I think there should be characters that they progressively just flat out light switch go, yeah, this character is going to be a different ethnicity. This one will be gay or not gay. If it lasts, they'll have a reason to keep it. If they don't, they'll just find a, oh no, looks like Superman banged on the time crystal again, and it's been removed from continuity. Whoops.
Tony,
what a funny year that was.
Tony Stark goes to San Francisco so that he can go to college, and this is just an experimenting phase.
does anyone remember Iron Lad? That charming, awful character? Let's make Tony Stark a teenager. Why not?
There was a character that was briefly made not gay, which was North Star.
That didn't take.
Because they couldn't.
That was about as successful as the reparative therapy song too. Sorry.
Who actually wrote? I can't remember who wrote the tear. It wasn't Matt Lowe. Sorry, it might have been Lobdell that actually wrote the elf story. I'm trying to remember.
I don't know, but you know, it's interesting because that, you know, that brings up, like, there are characters who have come out, like Shatterstar, for instance, who the original creator is very against the fact that he's turned into a gay character, and that's just too bad. You know, that's who Marvel has decided that character is. You know, I mean, in writing this article, do I really believe that Tony Stark is going to come out as gay? No, I don't. But my point is that I think Marvel needs to continue on this momentum that they have in recognizing that they need to boost characters that are not just white males. There's an audience for it that's very eager, and that includes, you know, that includes also expanding its look at sexual orientation. I think Ms. Marvel's an excellent example of how they took a legacy name, they put an amazing creative team behind it, and it's already a really strong success. Storm, which we'll be talking about in a little bit, a character who's long overdue for an ongoing series, could easily, and I believe, be a Marvel A-list character. She's got the pedigree for it, so that Marvel's putting that effort behind her, and if they continue to do so, that's going to mean a lot. What they've done for Black Widow, I think. You know, Black Widow, by the way, does not sell very well. It sells okay. If it was a DC book, it would be okay. For a Marvel book, it's a little dangerous. But I actually believe that Marvel's going to stick behind that book because they really want her to be key to the universe. She's appearing in like 3 or 4 books right now. They feel really strongly about that character, and to their credit.
It was interesting. Someone posted an old Marvel promo thing from the 1970s that had just headshots of all of their key characters. And it was interesting to me that the only woman in it was Black Widow. It was like a early 70s, probably about the time she was in the S.H.I.E.L.D. book. But it was interesting that, you know, out of like 10 prominent Marvel characters, that she was the one that they picked. I thought that was interesting. There's a lot of desire to make her a key character. Matt and I have actually talked. I think we talked on the show about our differing opinions of Black Widow. It turns out that when you don't reflect a character the way that some readers are used to reading them, they react poorly, Matt. I don't know.
Yes,
yes,
but I will. But here's the caveat: is that I said this at the last time I was on. I recognize that my ownership of that character in that sense, that time is done. I don't like the way that she's being written today because I don't recognize her the way I used to, but I do believe that she's being written well. And I do believe that there are people who for them, this is their Black Widow. This is the way the character is going to be written from now on. That's unquestionable.
So they recast as Angelina Jolie, and they go with a 50-ish Black Widow.
I doubt that. But, yeah, it's more likely whoever's 8 years old today will be the next. In 8 years,
it wouldn't be a We Talk Comics episode without a meowing cat in the background.
That's right.
I had no meows in the last episode. That's why it was so incredibly doomed. That episode went, the record went so poorly because at no point did my cat hassle. And I think that's one of the challenges, there is a big back and forth. Like, I think a lot of the discussion, it was interesting looking at the discussion back and forth on your, like, on Twitter, on the comments of your article, Matt, and on Facebook. One of the ones that comes up in every one of these changes is, why not just a new character? And I think that you address that well. I think that one of the things that, like, you listed off the some of the other gay characters in Marvel, and where are they? The idea that they're not introducing black characters, that they're not introducing female characters, is laughable. As one person pointed out, one great comment I saw was, the problem isn't introducing new characters for diversity, it's having popular characters that are diverse, which is much more challenging than just introducing new characters.
Right.
Marvel's a good model, though. Like,
and there is something of, I think, luck and just good timing, too, that goes into a lot of this. I think Ms. Marvel is a good example of that. Miles Morales is another good example of that. Again, a Spider-Man, maybe not the Spider-Man, but he was introduced very purposefully to add diversity to the Marvel line. He, you know, has a legacy name of some sort, a little bit different than Ms. Marvel. But making these characters popular, even any character, white, black, gay, female, is really difficult. There's very few characters at Marvel, and DC has the same problem, that are of this A level that were introduced in the last 25 years, even. Deadpool was probably like one of the major ones. Deathstroke over at DC.
Even Deathstroke's over 25 years, isn't it?
Right. Well, and so is Deadpool. Well, and they were.
Deadpool was. I guess it's getting close. Yeah, I mean, it was 90 maybe. But 1990.
Yeah. So, I mean, you like Rocket, and I think Rocket Raccoon is only now popular because of whatever.
Because they released a poster last year that he's going to be in a damn movie. That's the only reason Rocket Raccoon is popular right now. Howard the Duck is as cute as Rocket Raccoon, and if he was going to be in a Guardians of the Galaxy movie, we'd be buying Howard the Duck stuff toys right now.
Have you heard about the Howard the Duck stuff with Guardians? Have you heard that he's...
No. Hey, wait. If it's about the Guardians of the Galaxy movie, shut up. I'm not even going to be polite about it. Shut up. There is a hang up on the screen. Not a word. Okay.
But getting back to the point, so there's Deadpool. Who was the most popular character Marvel created before Deadpool? It would probably be Storm and Wolverine. I mean, now we're getting into the 70s. So it is not that easy to make popular characters. So to make a popular character that's African-American or black or African-American or Asian-American or gay or lesbian or even a woman is not that easy.
I'll say I in Canada it's still just black because we don't really care for the term African-American.
Sure. Well, most of Marvel and DC books are set in America. So.
I'm also looking for some good Canadian representation. I'm always.
You have Wolverine and Deadpool.
Wolverine hasn't paid taxes here since the 1970s. Deadpool.
You've got Alpha Flight, everyone's favorite Canuck team.
That's right. And it would be wonderful if they got a Canadian to work on Alpha Flight. I dearly love Greg Pak, and also Scott Lobdell worked on it. But there has not been a Canadian writing Alpha Flight in 30 years.
Should that matter?
Yes. in the same way that wouldn't it be great to occasionally have women write a book with a female lead? It would be wonderful to have Canada that doesn't have skyscrapers in cities of 5,000 people, which did happen in Avengers. Regina, where the tallest building is 12 stories, there were skyscrapers. There were like 50-story skyscrapers. It's called Google. I mean, you all have it. Look it up.
Well, it's one of the more interesting arguments that I, as an English major with my friends, run into about voice. Who can, like, say, a gay Iron Man? There are people who are going to go, is the lead writer gay? Then he shouldn't be writing it. What does he know? Is it a Canadian team? Well, no. Then they shouldn't be writing it. They know nothing of Canadians. It does get into some really interesting, especially with female characters, where, you know, should you let a man write a female character? What do they know about it? Where some people, it's really interesting just the opinions that some people will have on very well established, very good comics, and some people will throw it out and go, no, not a female writer, so I don't want to read that, per se, that character. But on other people, they'll be like, no, this is great, it's still a progressive step forward, because it's still, to the person who's reading it, they're not probably going to think, this, you know, I get to read this character, not I'm reading this writer writing this character.
I had a funny moment the other day when I was going back and forth between two graphic novels, and I just finished Garth Ennis Punisher Born, which is the origin story for the Marvel Max Punisher. So Garth Ennis writing, and then I went into Shade the Changing Man, Volume 1, written by Peter Milligan. Which is an amazing series. But both of them have this theme of where America has gone wrong. Born is really that America's losing its soul going into Vietnam. Shade is about it all went wrong when Kennedy died. America's never been the same. And I had this moment of, But Ennis is Irish, and Milligan's British. So I am a Canadian having an Irishman and a Brit. Tell me what's wrong with America. So it's not that it's invalid, but at the same time, it is a perspective that I think needs to be acknowledged in author theory. there is a perspective that's being used.
Yeah. But you know, I think that there's an easy counter to that is Greg Rucka. I mean, would you not trust Greg Rucka to write, I mean, anyone, really, but especially women, which I might have a little announcement about soon enough, but maybe by the end of the episode. But, you know...
Is it Whiteout 3?
No, it's not that. Not that momentous. A Comicosity announcement. You know, I think that the problem with so many people want to see, I mean, really women writing anything, much less women characters, is because there are so many poorly written women characters. And that's not about their writers being male so much as it's about them not
being great.
So,
And I think that's a good observation of what I'm really like. I mean, I'm being a little tongue in cheek when I complain about Canadian writers writing off flight, but the way the Canadians view the world is different than the way Americans view the world. And
I believe it.
There were writers that I thought had a better handle on it. I thought Matlow's work was, though the stories weren't always the best, he certainly heard it better. I just haven't heard that because it's the militaristic thing that tends to come out in Alpha Flight as a government agency, that is not part of the Canadian psyche. If you want to tell me that Greg Rucka is going to work on Alpha Flight, we're in business. With Vindicator leading the team, Heather Hudson leading the team, I think it'd be awesome. I would like just, you know, I mean, Greg, I don't want to say better writers because I mean, Greg Pak is a talented writer and I like his work. And I thought his off flight was also terrible. Now Jeff Lemire is writing a team based in Canada. It actually feels like Canada.
Right.
It's good times for me.
And I think that there should be, I mean, no matter what sexual orientation, say, a character has, I just want there to be a bigger, and I think that there, I think this is hopefully Marvel's big, how to make this rather large thought. Within the past few years, I think that, and the internet and Tumblr and Twitter and Facebook have certainly helped, I think that Marvel in particular becoming their merger with Disney, turning into a huge in your homes kind of thing. I think that I would hope that it has forced them to start reconsidering, more girls want to read comics, huh? Maybe we should start doing something about that. Or, looks like there's a lot of African Americans and blacks and the people in other countries that read our work. Maybe we should do something about that. But it's still Disney, so I think they're going to take very small baby steps. But there's still steps that have to be taken, and I'm glad that it looks like Marvel's trying to respect the creative process by moving in a direction that will allow them to. Now, this isn't like to us. I mean, if you've read comics, I mean, you know that there was Isaiah Bradley was Captain America. They've made lots and lots of. There have been many diverse things that have happened in comics, but this popularity issue kind of comes up. Great, this happened. Who knows about it outside of the person that say dug through volumes and volumes of comics, and I hope that their ability to use something like Comic-Con and then films, I would hope, that it will allow them to start being able to do things that are more progressive because they should be in 2014. You'd think that would be a very important thing to be like, maybe we should actually write that there should be gay characters instead of not writing about some or having the ones that we have be a big ta-da reveal. I would just want them to just be consistent, respectful with how they write, and especially women. I mean, the artists that sometimes they pick for covers is pretty... I feel bad to be a comic book fan. I mean, one of my friends once asked what he wanted to know, what comics can I give my 10-year-old little sister to read that, you know, is appropriate for a 10-year-old? And it was a large Facebook discussion, and most of us could just kind of go, Runaways? That's all we could really think of. And it was a really good comic. It was really great. But it does kind of get into this issue of they still draw women in a way that's very disrespectful. There's an art style that many people are like, we're honoring it. And it's like, no, that's pretty bad. you don't have to do that. And I would actually hope that if they did something like, say, make Iron Man gay, all I would hope they would do if they were or anything like that is just be respectful and go, okay, let's have a good writer who won't turn this into, you know, a stereotype Iron Man that, you know, just the worst gay representation you could think of. And just have them be a good human character, just like they should have men who write women as humans, not as busty leg objects that happen to be able to have superpowers. I mean, so many points out there at once. It makes comics are just so... There's mainstream comics that you'll get people like Marvel, and then there's the things that you get when you go into a comic book store. I would hope over time the kinds of things that I at least see normally when I go into a comic book store start to go away, and the things that I start seeing when I'm in like a movie theater watching a Marvel movie start to be more prevalent, which is lots more diversity, lots more families and people of all ages and genders and sexualities enjoying comics and just being like, hey, this stuff's really fun, as opposed to, that's not my North Star. How dare they go against Rob Liefeld's respective wishes?
My North Star was an elf who was stranded on Earth. My North Star wasn't gay. He was just one of a pair of elf twins that had gotten stranded here and got sick because he was too long in man's world.
Poor Aurora. Like, I'm so completely overshadowed by her brother now.
Who the hell is Aurora?
Yeah, I don't know. Well, where's North Star? Nowhere.
Nowhere.
So, and this is really funny.
Extended honeymoon. Enjoy your New York Times article. North Star. We'll see you in another 10 years.
Well, and that's really my issue is that, yes, we can talk about North Star's wedding all we want until we're blue in the face. But the bottom line is that North Star didn't get a solo book out of it. North Star's not even in a book right now. And
how long did that book last? Like 10 issues? Like
another 5 or 6 after that. Maybe.
It was number 50 was the wedding. So I don't, it didn't make it that much further.
Yeah, maybe another 10 issues.
Yeah. I mean, there was no sustained interest in that.
I think
also
it's
accepting
also...
offers for the one I've got sitting in a box that, the last gasp of I bought it to support the book. Now I
even do that.
Just give it to someone. I really should have bought it digitally to support the book, and then I wouldn't have this thing sitting in a damn box. It would just be into the ether.
Right. I think that's the problem. Even the characters from Young Avengers, most of whom were actually LGBT. Well, that book did, again, it's sort of like Black Widow. It didn't do brackets, but it did okay, probably a little better. But for Marvel just to let that book drop because a popular creative team left it, I think that's a little problematic. And it just speaks to how difficult it is to move those characters forward if they don't have that kind of momentum. So if that book was being published do or die every month, would Wiccan become a major character in the Marvel universe or Hulkling or whatever? Maybe, but they're not going to become a major character just appearing in a original Sin tie-in issue. It's just not going to happen. And North Star is the same way. Although I don't know that North Star's been around for a really long time. If he hasn't hit it by now, I don't think that's happening.
Yeah, that character's been around for what, 40 years?
Yeah,
close
at least
to. Almost 40 years.
Yeah, but then you look at characters like Batwoman and Ms. Marvel and Ultimate Spider-Man, Miles Morales. You know, those characters, yes, are derivative, but they're at least in the, if not the overall arching popular consciousness, certainly in the comic book community's consciousness in a very large way. So, you know, taking those opportunities to push characters forward, yes, does it have to be Iron Man? No. Could it be, you know, someone almost Iron Man? You know, like, what, you know what I mean? Like, I used Iron Man, obviously, because it was the, you know, the single guy who was the third part of the Holy Trinity at Marvel. But if it was Wolverine, or if it was Cyclops, or if it was someone of, you know, of that sort of quality of character, I would be equally as happy.
I just, when you mentioned Iron Man, at first I was kind of like, that doesn't jive well for what I initially thought, because I'm thinking Robert Downey Jr. with Gwyneth Paltrow as a couple Iron Man, which is the movie Iron Man is what I'm most used to. I never read a lot of comic Iron Man, unless he was a part of a bigger team or it was a crossover event. So then, as you started mentioning, well, here's all his issues, I kind of went, okay. I wouldn't be surprised.
But let's be honest about movie Iron Man. Gwyneth Paltrow's character died, and he was like, eh.
what can he do?
what can you do? And he kept fighting.
I hope she wrote down my appointment.
There was not been a like, no!
It was
pretty much just like, oh, well. Back. Great.
I gotta say that, with the exception of Black Widow and only in Winter Soldier, women in Marvel movies just suck. Like, they're just terrible characters. Besides Black Widow in only Winter Soldier, I don't think there's any woman in a Marvel movie that passes Kelly Sue DeConnick's sexy lamp test.
I actually think Black Widow in Avengers is past this, but yes, probably not in Iron Man 2.
And Jane Foster is the sexy lamp. Oh my God, she is Jane Foster in Thor 2.
Maria Hill is kind of the unsexy lamp. Like,
she's just a lamp.
She's just the regular lamp.
It's funny that you mentioned Pepper's character dying and Tony being eh, because in the second of the Rockstar Arkham games, Talia dies right in front of Batman. She is impaled with a sword, I think, and he's kind of like, Joker dies. He picks up his body and slowly carries it away. And one of my friends was like, that's so Batman. Talia dies. She'll be back. Joker dies. Goodbye, my love. And it was there.
Yeah, that makes sense to me.
Because he was like, who's he had a longer relationship with, really?
But deeper. I don't know. I mean, Talia's always been that sort of like secondhand. Like, if he could get Catwoman, he'd have Catwoman. If Catwoman was unavailable, well, there's Talia.
Like, there was a.
She's not like, even a Betty Talia's and Veronica.
Like Catwoman's not as attractive sister. Like, it's not really the one I wanted to go out with, but she's all right, I guess.
I'm not sure if
it's a small town. There's only so many single women in my line of work.
I wasn't sure if it was from an actual comic or if it was fan art. If it was, it was very good fan art. It's a picture of Harley Quinn looking up at Batman and going, "I don't know what you're so worried about. He's never gonna leave you." And it was just kind of this like really sad, like, "Ow, right in my heart, yeah. Poor Harley." It's like, oh.
But that's true.
Mm-hmm.
There is a lot to be said for the Batman and the Joker's relationship. That maybe not so much to be said about Batman and Talia's, except for Damian.
Oh.
Although the debate about how he was made is still raging. I thought it was pretty clear to be consensual, but, you know.
That's Well, there's a whole other issue as I've like been reading some different comics of late. Female on male rape in comics is like ridiculously common. There are so many children that are introduced because, like, you know, Jonah Hex was drugged and then the woman had her way with him. And
Jonah Hex as a kid?
It was one story in like the first volume. But it was like, right. Yeah, it was. But that's what it was. It was like Jonah Hex was unconscious. And that's like,
some writer suggested that for how Damien was created, and then it got undone already. Because in last week's Robin Rises, it was clearly consensual. Yeah. So, I mean, Batman didn't necessarily consent to having like 30 of Damien's produced in bubbles or whatever. But he did consent to that one night.
To the act.
So,
yeah.
Yes.
He wasn't
for sure.
He wasn't signing off on a litter, but,
No.
he thought it was just a practice round. I was quite surprised in the Robin Rises just how much detail they went into of what is in continuity and what isn't. I think that's one of that's probably the biggest info dump for how the continuity of like going back before, pre-New 52 that we've seen in any book.
I think you're right.
I was quite surprised. Just, I mean, not only just how much volume, I mean, it was a 7 pages of the book, but to actually go through, like almost as a checklist of this is in, this is in, this is in.
Yeah.
I was quite surprised by that. There's a bit of a shift happening right now, and I'm not sure where they're going, but, you know, for that to come out at the same time, like just, you know, a week or two after, the Superman number 32, the first Geoff Johns that has, you know, the for sure confirmation that some version of Death of Superman happened. For those to drop in the same month when they've been quite careful about that stuff up till now.
And I think that's a real strange, I can't even imagine the tightrope that they have to walk when you realize, this comic is getting pretty convoluted. We need to fix it. Well, we can't ignore, say, X, Y, or Z. So how do you include X, Y, or Z if you do decide, well, we need a reboot or we do need to fix something? That's a backdoor convert. That's a back office conversation that I would not want to be a part of with, I imagine, huge whiteboards full of names and strange squiggles and charts and lines, and then having to figure out, if we get rid of this, this will make this percentage of the comic reading population very angry. But if we weigh it against how many people will make happy if we do this, you know, blah, 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 blah. I'm just sure that I just can't imagine whenever the creators come on to talk about, say say a comic is in the conception stage and they go, yeah, we really want to do this. And then they're writing it and they kind of change their tune a little bit. They're like, we thought this was a good idea, but then we decided to change our mind. Like when they killed Professor Xavier with the Avengers versus X-Men, it wasn't even planned. They just went, we figured we could kill someone and, Professor X.
And it's been like a week and a half since we killed Professor X. When I started reading that book, I had to be reminded. I'm reading it. I'm like, he's alive? that guy might be Jean Grey's continuity.
But his son came, who looks just like him. And now they're finally reading his will, which means he'll be back next week. No, I mean, but that's an interesting thing.
I'm putting that in my will. But as soon as they read my will, I'm back.
Right.
Retcon
back. Might as well not even claim those that issue of Astonishing X-Men, because you'll be back for it. But that you know, that gets back to the discussion that we were having. You know, is Professor X coming back? Well, Brian Bendis says absolutely not. That he's gone. That he's not, as long as he's writing the book, he's not coming back.
I mean, that's as far as caveat.
but you know, so I don't even know that Rick Remender would make that claim about Captain America or Jason Aaron about Thor. But you know, And someone actually said to me, like, you know, this is not permanent. And I'm like, well, here's the thing. I'm going to go on the assumption that when they say this is the way it's going to be from now on, and they did say that with Thor, that that's the truth. Now, is it likely the truth? I don't know. but it would be nice if it was. And I think that's where I'm coming from.
It's a nice conceit to believe, as long as you can believe it. And certainly with Superior Spider-Man, I was 70% annoyed and 30% genuinely jealous of people who could be that upset about it because they thought it was going to be a forever thing. Like, the Peter Parker was really dead, and Peter Parker was never, ever coming back. And the naivete, I actually was a bit jealous of that. I kind of wish I could read comics like that and just be completely removed from all logic and reality and experience.
When my fiance and I went to go see Captain America: Winter Soldier, we're sitting in the audience and we're watching it, and it gets to the part where, oh no, Bucky's mask has been removed. And I swear to you, the two women who were behind us, one of them goes, oh, is that Bucky? Was that the Bucky? Like, oh no, what? They were, I'm like, aww. Did you not see the posters for this movie? His face without the mask was everywhere. Did you see a trailer? Did you see your Burger King wrapper for the cups that were on the movie theater? His face is on the cup. How could you be shocked?
I was experimenting with this. I used my wife as a focus group for this movie because, of course, Winter Soldier, I knew what was going to happen. She had seen First Avenger. She wasn't much for it, but she actually did like Sebastian Stan. I always get that. Sebastian Stan is the villain in the X-Men comic books. Sebastian Stan is the actor who plays the Winter Soldier. So I, like, of course, I know everything. You know, like, what's, you know, the key plot point. But my wife doesn't. She does not read comics. And I had this experiment. I wanted to see how far you could make it before you would find out. She only had one place. It wasn't the poster. It was not the trailer. It was not a Burger King cup, because we don't go to Burger King. It was none of those things. It was an article on TMZ announcing his contract deal for 9 movies. That is the place that spoiled it. None of those other things, because he's pretty obscured, actually. Like, if you don't know what you're looking at, he is pretty obscured on the poster. And the trailers don't actually give it away. Like,
I thought his face was visible in one of the trailers.
You have to know what you're looking at. It's like a magic eye thing. You have to know there's a sailboat. She actually, it was like 2 weeks before. She felt bad that it got ruined for her, because she knew I was doing this experiment. And until we watched the movie, and then afterward, I'm like, okay, be honest, like, was it a surprise? She said no, like, a couple of weeks ago. One of the gossip sites I go to talked about his contract, so I did know that it was that what was happening. But that was actually the only place she heard it before we went to the film.
But there are times I wish that I did not know where to go to look for the comic covers for, say, next week's comics, because sometimes they reveal so much. I'm like, oh, okay, that's gonna happen. It's a little spoilery. Oh darn. But I wish sometimes I could be genuinely surprised by some things. And that was the first thing that my friend was so excited. He's like, man, they killed Peter Parker. There's going to Otto is Spider-Man. This is the best change this comic's ever had. Wow, in 5 years, people are going to forget all about Peter Parker.
I talked to someone who was like so genuinely annoyed at me that I was like sad the story was over. Like, I was just liking that so much. I don't give a crap about Peter Parker. Like, there's like 50 years of Peter Parker stories that I read it for a long time, and then I stopped reading it because I kind of felt I've read as much Peter Parker as I want to read.
I could only watch him muck up his life so much before I wish that I could just. Punch him.
I was given a digital copy of Amazing Spider-Man, and I was in. I get the nerd block, which is what's the other Loot Crate is the one in the U.S. Like, I get nerd block cartridges in Canada. You can get it in the US, but Canadian one. They actually put an Amazing Spider-Man number one in the box, which was really cool. Fan Expo sponsored it, and every box got an Amazing Spider-Man print copy. So I've been given this comic
twice. Like a dog.
I've been given this comic twice, and I still have not read it because I just can't bring myself. I don't want Superior Spider-Man to be over. I'm like, exactly.
It's not. Because it's coming back.
Yeah, but it's going to come back the way like Scarlet Spider came back. Like it's, I mean, everything comes back, but it's never the same.
But it's him in the year 2099. It's going to be great. I'm so excited. I want to know what he's doing there.
I agree with one of those three sentences. all right. I think we've had an interesting discussion, and I think that certainly I have looked deep inside to ask myself why I had reactions to Matt's column. It's a very provocative piece. Do check it out on Comicosity under the columns drop down, Crisis of Epic Proportions. Do we want to do some Wii views?
Sure.
And Michael's pretty new to the show. Matt, do you know what we do when we do Wii views? We're saving you from what?
We're saving you from bad comics, but I don't believe in talking about bad comics, so.
Is that meaning I'm getting stuck with Gru?
Well, that's, since it's been telegraphed several times in this episode so far, why don't we start with Gru versus Conan? Yeah, okay.
Is it versus or meets or?
It is versus, but.
but.
Conan or Conan?
I've heard it different ways. I think it is Conan.
Conan, yeah.
I like Conan.
But I will say, you like Conan, of course. I will say that this comic actually did the impossible, and it made me like Conan by comparison. Who, by the way, appears in like three pages.
Yep. It's just so awful. It was fun for what it was, but it's just, I was like, this is not at all what I was expecting. What a bizarre social experiment this comic apparently is. I'm sure the authors are just kicking back like, man, we had such a good time making this. The people who read it are like, what am I reading?
They do have a genuinely good time doing these books. I've
because they're the stars.
And yeah, it is.
I'm glad somebody's having a good time.
they have just kicked the fourth wall to the curb. As on the fifth page, we start getting a mix of Conan and Gru artwork. Which when I hit that page, I'm like, oh, this is kind of neat. They're gonna use who's the artist? Thomas Yeats. Is doing the Conan pages. Sergio is doing the Gru stuff, and then they started doing a mix, which is, it's kind of reminded me of some of the Cerebus appearances, where Dave Sim used to do this thing where the way they did the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, for example, was that that Eastman and Laird would do the page, and they would leave the space that that Cerebus was in. And they would send the pages, and Sim would draw Cerebus, and that's the way Spawn was done as well. Is that that Dave Sim always drew Cerebus in the book, and he would draw everything and just leave the space for Cerebus. So I was interested to see how they would start playing with these, like, you know, two artists doing work together, and then I flipped to the next page where the book is the comic book equivalent of a train wreck. It is either the most brilliantly meta thing on the shelves in the past 5 years, or just pure stupidity. It could be both.
So I'm because I don't know if it would have been funny to you if it was for me. Have either of y'all ever actually read like the Robert Howard Conan stories before?
No, the books, no.
Mm-hmm. They're fun. They're really interesting for what they are. I'm not laughing quite about that, but the Conan panel's actually pretty. It's a pretty good parody of what Conan is, And that's why at first I was like, man, this comic's going to be great. I'm so happy. They're actually doing like a really good snark at the way like Howard kind of writes Conan and what it's sort of like and what the comics just kind of are. It's like, ah, the fear, the screaming. I heard her screaming. I will go make sure that monster screams to keep her from the screaming. I was like, ah, this is perfect. And then it stops and it turns into the rest of it. I'm just like, what? All right, well, they're going to get to the part where they're gonna keep writing it. Okay, nope. Now the writer of Gru is in a tree. He's escaped the hospital and he's in a tree. All right, what is going on? And it just, and then I was like, oh, this is going to turn into at the very end they're going to meet or something. And of course, it gets back to the end. And it's like, ah, they finally have met. It's like, I'm never reading this comic again. I don't care. You only had one shot, and he spent most of it comparing a comic book store to a bread house. I'm done. Nope.
So, anyone getting number two? Anyone?
Yeah, I'm not sure I even made it that far. I literally stopped reading in the middle.
Matt will, as well as not being back for number two, Matt will not be back for the second half of number one. All right, let's move on from that. Let us do the title with the longest book at the title week: Star Spangled War Stories, featuring the premiere of G.I. Zombie. It is in the New 52 with an exclamation mark. This is a number one from Palmiotti, Gray, and Scott Hamilton, who is artist and colorist on the book.
Hampton.
Somebody, oh, yeah. Hampton. Close enough. let's see now. Who wants to start on some Star Spangled War stories?
I wrote the review for Comicosity, so I should go last.
I actually thought it was a lot like Gru, but in that where the cover was nothing at all like what was actually in the comic, I was actually still pretty entertained. I spent the whole time going, are we going to see him in an actual war? Where does the GI play in this? No GI in this comic. All right, cool. But it was still actually really entertaining for a premise. Once it actually got to introducing the main character as not being tied up and having his hands chopped off.
It took a while to hit pace. It's certainly not my favorite Palmiotti and Gray work. The artwork had several times where I was just, like, it's just kind of clunky. There's a page, it's only like about the, what is it? Third page in, there's a bit where she's playing pool. The next panel, she's in a bathroom. The next panel, she's talking to some dude. It's just chunk, and there's no flow. The stuff's kind of stiff, like it looks like photo reference stuff. Just the facial expressions, it really looks like it's copied from something. I've seen Hampton's work before, and it hasn't felt like this. It's the woman's face just is. It's really the female character's face more than the others that it really looks traced from something. The expressions are kind of wooden, kind of fake.
Like maybe there was a reference model.
Yeah. Yeah. Like he got a friend to do a friend or his wife to do a whole bunch of surprised looks basically that he's copying from. I was curious, but I mean, it's certainly not of the quality for me that All-Star Western or the creator-owned Heroes books, for example, have been. It's just not nearly the work I'm used to from Palmiotti and Gray. I might or might not come back for a second issue. I don't know that it grabbed me enough even to try the number two. I wanted to like this book more than I did. I think it's the most honest thing to say.
I'm in the same boat.
I actually liked it quite a bit, but I did have a lot of there was just a big adjustment for me because I went in expecting it to be one thing, and it clearly was not. I went in expecting it to be sort of like Frankenstein. Agent of Shade, a little more DC New 52-ish, and what I feel like we got was a little more of a creator-owned book. Not that it's just this, it's not even the characters or the plot, but the style of writing just felt like very different to me. The pacing, even the art style, it's something I would have expected from like an Image book or maybe even a smaller press book. But that said, I enjoyed it. But I do think that there wasn't a whole lot of character explored in this. Well, that's not true. I think there was a lot of personality explored in this first issue, but not a lot of detail on history or setup. And that kind of bothered me a little bit. But I like the premise, and I think it's just interesting as far as a diversification of the line goes. So I'm definitely interested in checking out more.
All right. Well, we got one last book to review here, coming from Marvel, as mentioned earlier in the episode. We have Greg Pak, and the artist's name is Ibanez?
Mm-hmm. Victor Ibanez, I believe.
Victor Ibanez. And Ruth Redman, colorist, Storm number one. Let's start with you on this one, Matt. Last
one. Okay. I thought it was fantastic. Again, this is a book that I feel like we've been waiting for a really long time, that we should have had years and years ago. But there were a lot of things to love in this book. I am a fan of Greg Pak's, and I think the work that he's been doing over in Action and Batman Superman has been really great. But I think he really captured Storm's personality pretty perfectly in this book. I liked the sort of interplay between her and the student at the school, whose name escapes me. Creep, I think it is.
Creep. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Creep. I thought that was a really interesting interplay. I was a little less interested in her discussion with Hank McCoy. But what really sold me on this issue was actually Victor Ibanez's art. I thought he did a really fantastic job. It's crisp, it's clean, really beautiful. And Storm absolutely looks like an African-American woman and not just like a Caucasian woman with dark skin. And I think that's a really important thing for that character. And kudos to Marvel for getting an artist on the book that can do that.
Michael, you want to weigh in?
I thought it was great. And I say that as someone who actually really has not given any care for any X character in quite a long time. Storm especially, I think she's actually a little hard to write for, because how do you accurately write a character who viewed herself as a god? I think that kind of personality is, sometimes some writers will get it pretty good, other times not so much. I'm used to the not so much. So this was actually the big, big surprise comic. Of all the things that I've read, just that I read on my own, that I think, oh, I'll try that out. Maybe it'll be good. This has actually been the best, because it tackles all the things that I kind of really want X-Men to tackle, which is that they should handle some issues that aren't explicitly mutant-based, that it should be people-based, like Storm, like her conflict involving people being relocated. I thought was very interesting. I don't recall the X-Men ever handling many things on that strictly a political nature without mutants inherently being involved. So I thought that was a really, really good topic. I liked the Creeper or Creep. Her argument is something that I hear a lot leveled at X-Men a lot all the time. I hear about, oh, it's privilege. They're going to go to a special white people school and train to be, you know, basically Professor X's white doppelganger. They're his like super agents. And it's like, what is it like to be kidnapped from your home if you're an X-Men? Do you have to go there? Can Spider-Man be an X-Men? What's your, like, what? How does that work? So I was actually really glad that they had a character bring that up, and Storm didn't, she was upset by it, but she didn't be like, oh, how dare you, harumph. And at the end, she actually had a really good resolution with that kind of thought process of, maybe we shouldn't be asking kids to to come here. Maybe that is a pretty terrible idea. And then I thought that in one comic to deal with that the way they did, I thought was actually pretty, to me anyway, from my experience with X-Men, pretty groundbreaking for how X-Men should treat their own subject matter of should you indoctrinate kids to be soldiers and then resolve it in a way that doesn't turn into, well, I guess we have to have two schools, and I guess we have to have two, one school is very clearly evil, one school is very clearly good. So I thought that it was great. I think it did everything that I would like an X-Men comic to do on a more consistent basis, and I actually really want to read everything that comic, like, creates. I thought it was fabulous.
I didn't really like it.
Really?
I liked bits of it. I like some of, I like bits and pieces. The whole thing with the military junta in Africa, it really, I just feel I've read that 1,000 times.
I would agree with that.
I mean, certainly that's a Superman story I've read like 50 times. That
it was in Batwing as well.
Yeah, like where they go from here could be something different. Where it's starting from is very familiar. The way she solves that argument with resolves that argument with the student is that she almost fries the kid with a lightning bolt, which is a little is mixed message for how that discussion goes. I don't think it's quite as clear as what you're saying. She like fries the room with lightning. And you know what happens when you hit a student with a bolt of lightning? Same thing as everything else.
But the writer won't write it that way.
That's right.
So she'll be fine. I don't know.
The most positive thing is I agree with Matt of the way that Storm is portrayed. It is a character that is very well known, has potential to be really an A-list character. I applaud the existence of this comic. I don't think I will continue reading it, but I've been talking a lot lately about how I kind of want to take 5 years off Marvel from reading Marvel regularly. And then in 5 years, people can tell me what the cream of the crop was. This may very well be one of those books that when I'm looking back, people are like, the ones you need to read are definitely Storm, Greg Pak's run on Storm, and then they'll say like there was really nothing for like 2 years because they just did this weird story with gay Iron Man that didn't really last.
It was all a dream. It
didn't make any sense, and I don't know.
And then teenage Tony shows back up.
It's all
taken care of.
It's Zorn all over again.
Turns out everything.
Not to change the subject back, but there has been a suggestion that the way they're going to solve the Death of Wolverine story is that they're just going to bring the gay Wolverine over. From whatever that book was.
As I have established in the Read Betweens the Lines column on Comicosity about the end of Age of Ultron, there already is a superfluous Wolverine. They don't need to do anything.
There's a couple.
Around. there's a fully functional, fully experienced Wolverine that's exactly this game character that's just hanging around next to Nick Fury's flying car. There's an easy way out of this thing. I will say, Michael, that of the you can make any argument you want on, we can tell stories about characters dying and make it compelling. Even Charles Soule is not going to get me to read Death of Wolverine because it is like there is zero chance I will have an emotional reaction to the Death of Wolverine. Just absolute zero.
Yeah, and that's why he should be gay.
That's right.
So tune in next week when I write I want a gay Wolverine.
That is a checklist of representation right there. A gay older adult Canadian mutant. You're checking all the lists. He is the oldest older adult in comics right now.
Yeah.
Now that they've shot the Watcher in the head. Those bastards at DC, the comics at DC are way too violent. all right. Well, I think we've talked this thing down. Buy some good comics. It is the week of San Diego. The amount of deals and free comics codes that you're going to see coming up digital in the next few days, it's going to drain my wallet, that's for sure. We've mentioned the Comixology Submit Bundle. I just saw that a top shelf sale on graphic novels is happening, which I've been waiting for another one to come up. There's Jeff Lemire books in there. Essex County is like $5. Underwater World is $4.
Oh my God, get it.
March Book One, nominated for, as we were talking about in the last episode, nominated for Harvey Award, $5. Amazing graphic novels. I'm a big pusher of graphic novels. I think that that's a form that more people should be picking up. And here's a whole pile of them for, you know, the price of a regular comic book. Check Comixology and search Twitter just for the words comic book and free, and you'd be amazed what comes up. Marvel's been giving away codes. You can get Black Widow number one is free right now. Code is Widow. Inhuman number one is free. Code is Black Bolt. I've now given you, for like $20, I've now given you like 800 comics. Get to it. All right, you can follow me on Twitter at CubReporterK and thank me for putting you on all these amazing comics. You can like our page on Facebook, which I believe, please like it because you can get us up into the double digits. We Talk Podcasts. You can also follow We Talk Podcasts on Twitter, which is the Twitter feed for both We Talk Comics and We Talk Wrestling. We are on the Comics Podcast Network as well. Michael, plug your stuff.
I'm the writer for the Comics Classroom column on Comicosity. Pretty much I try to do any kind of interesting column that I can, whether it's trying to, whether it's covering my master's thesis or if it's trying to talk about women in comics or any issue that I think is relevant. I try to plug it there on Twitter. It's just Comics Classroom. Just ComixClassroom. Just so an X, not an S. But I'm not as active on there as I should be, but I'm very thankful for all of my followers and anyone that reads my work, and I'm very thankful for being allowed on this show again. Not just once, but twice. Oh, boy.
And Cousin Oliver.
Yes. I am Photocub, FOTOCUB, on Twitter. You can check out my I Want a Gay Iron Man article on comicosity.com. You can tweet at me and tell me why I'm wrong, and I'm sure I've never heard it before. But in other news, do look forward to, and this is the first time I'm publicly announcing this, so once again, I'm giving We Talk Comics an absolute exclusive. We are launching the Monday after San Diego Comic-Con, a 10-day interview series called Interviewing Greg Rucka, writer of many, many, many female characters. It is a interview series called Game Changers. That will go on and interview other creators, but we're starting out with 10 interviews with the very kind Mr. Rucka on 10 of his original female characters from the last 20 years. It's going to be a fantastic interview series. I'm really excited. It was an absolute pleasure to put together, and it is just another way that Comicosity wants to look at women in comics, which is something that Michael does fairly often.
thank you for saying that.
I'm really looking forward to that. I am approaching the end of my. I've been doing this experiment this year where I'm reading various comic series one issue per day. I finished Starman. I am now into volume 4 of Gotham Central, and I love Renee Montoya even more every issue that I read of Gotham Central. It will take all of my resistance to not go immediately into rereading 52, which I only reread like 6 months ago. So I looking forward to that series. I think it's great to highlight, particularly Rooka's, characters, just a remarkable work. And thank you both for joining us on the Comicosity All-Star episode. We are OUT.